I need to do something international. I need to do something for young women. And 6 months later, Belinda Strada called me up. And I didn't know Belinda. She crossed the floor. I was gone by the time she did that, so we didn't really cross paths too often. And she called me up and she said, I'm thinking of setting up a foundation. Do you want to help me? And once again, I thought, I don't know anything about setting up a foundation. But I said, yeah, I'll help. That sounds kind of cool. And so I got to know Belinda, and that was February 2008, I think. And over the course of, she tells people that over the course of 3 months, I interviewed her, and we tried to find out whether or not we would be copacetic together, which is important. And in the end, we decided we were going to set up a foundation where we would focus on young people. Because as I was just saying to Brendan earlier, I think one of the biggest challenges we have in life is that we've got kids going to school and they're coming out because people are working longer and living longer and jobs don't exist. Our young people, you guys, are going to school, you're coming out with debt. You want to work in the areas in which you want to work, but you're taking other jobs that are not in your area of focus because you have to. And that is not sustainable. That's not right. That's not the world we want to live in. That's not how Canada became Canada. So for me, I think one of the biggest challenges and one of the responsibilities of the private sector, the not-for-profit, and government is to figure out how do we invest in this future generation so they can invest in the country, period. So what does that mean for social programs? What does that mean for government programs? What does that mean for opportunities in the private sector? What does that mean for technology? But we need to start thinking about these things. So when Belinda and I started thinking about what we could do, we focused on three areas. She already had a very successful program called Spread the Net, which is a malaria eradication program. So that was going to continue. And Rick Mercer really helped sort of push that program out. I think Queens actually did participate in raising money for malaria nets at one point. The second area was Aboriginal youth. Aboriginal youth are the fastest growing population in Canada outside of immigration, believe it or not. But they don't have the same access to all the tools that you guys and I take for granted. They don't have computers, they don't have the same level of education, they don't have the same opportunities. So how do we make sure that rather than have that population not be involved in the uplifting of Canada and instead be a pull on our resources, how do we invest in them? The first thing we should do is give them access to technology. So we created a program called One Laptop Per Child Canada. And it went into 15 different pilot programs and really worked on, if you give kids in Aboriginal communities access to the internet and ability to talk to each other, all the stuff that we have, what would come of it? And they're about to do their assessment, but it will show that Canadians, kids, when you give them this tool, the sky is the limit. They will think better about themselves. They will want to be more engaged with their families and their communities. And so there'll be decisions that need to be made about whether or not that program continues. Then the third program, the one that I'm supposed to spend all my time on, but I'm talking a lot about other stuff, is called Girls 20. So here you had a former cabinet minister and businesswoman, together with myself, that had a political background, a communications background, a branding background, and I'm fiercely competitive. And so it's December 2009, and it's about 4 in the morning, and I wake up and I'm like, I got it, we should have our own Girls 20, because Canada was hosting the G20. Canada was going to be on the world spotlight. So it's a political group of people who are very much focused on an economic challenge, right? So my big thing was, how do we talk about something that they care about and combine about something that we care about? And the biggest issue was there were 600 million girls not going to school. 600 million girls, that's ridiculous. That is a lost opportunity. So a bunch of us got together, Belinda, a musician, a businesswoman from a bank, myself, somebody from magazine writing, and there was some wine flowing. And we thought, we are going to have a Girls 20. That was in December, and by June 2010, we had a full-fledged global summit. And the Girls 20 does this. It brings together in the same format as the G20. I do believe in plagiarism in that sense, not in any of these senses, but if you're going to plagiarize later on in life, that's fine. We took their concept and we said, look, you can have one leader from each G20 country plus the African Union and the European Union, so can we. We're going to do that. So we bring one girl together, they're aged 18 to 20, and they come together and they represent their country. They sit around a round table and they come up with ideas. And the way we do this is, first of all, we invest in these girls. So before they even come to Moscow this year, Mexico last year, Paris the year before, and Toronto the year before that, we invest in them. They do the Myers-Briggs assessment tool. Has anyone done that? Okay. So Myers-Briggs will tell you your strengths and your challenges when it comes to leadership. They're now 18, and they have this powerful tool at their disposal. So they do the assessment. They spend 30 minutes with somebody. They learn about their actual outcomes. That's before they even come together. They also have to write a blog post. So we all know about blog posts now. We have blog posts with Forbes.com, HuffingtonPost.com, and our website. And we ask the girls to start being contributors to these different mediums. They also have to come well-read. So we know the theme always of the G20 summit. Changes every year. We managed to get it early in. This year it's jobs, growth, and investment. So we say, jobs, growth, and investment, that's great. Let's look at health, agriculture, mining, and oil and gas. And let's look at those areas in terms of girls and women being contributing members to those different areas. So we've taken their theme and we've pushed it a little further. But that means the girls have to be well-read in all of those areas, because this is not a kumbaya camp. You don't come here and make 20 new friends, sing kumbaya, learn a couple stuff, and go home. No. You come, you're prepared, and if you're serious about being a leader, you have to come well-versed in some of the challenges. So now they come together, they arrive in Moscow, we give them 5 hours to sleep, and then we put them through workshops. And the workshops are the following. Google is one of our major partners and has been since day one. They bring all the girls to the Google office. Now, we Google every day. Has anyone ever here met a Googler? These girls meet Googlers. They go into the Google office, they go Google stuff, and they meet Googlers. And then Google gives them a workshop on how do you actually use technology to accelerate your message. That's unbelievable time. 4 hours they get with them. Then, because I am convinced that we do not teach financial fundamentals, compound interest, how do you get a loan, how do you save for a loan, how do you get yourself out of that loan, all that kind of stuff we should be teaching before you get your credit card in your hand. I got my first credit card with a nice little picture of the JUC. It had $5,000 on it, and I went nuts. Then I went, hey, Daddy. Never again did I do that, because while my daddy was nice enough to pay off that first credit card, he never did it again. I think fundamentally we should be teaching our girls and boys the fundamentals of finance. So we put them through a really rigorous, everything you need to know about credit, everything you need to know about building a business plan. They're 18 to 20, keep that in mind. And then we teach them about negotiations when it comes to loans. These are life skills that all of us are going to use. The third workshop is one that is given by Norton Rose and Business Leadership. So now they've done their assessment, they've come together. Now they have a 4-hour workshop on actual leadership fundamentals. And they do role play, which I think is amazing, right? They're put in a position of having to interview or interview and really play out those leadership roles. And then the fourth one is a personal favorite. It's media and communication. So how do you conduct a media interview? We take these girls and we play it back to them. Once you see that, you're going to carry yourself differently. You're going to speak differently. We really put an emphasis on your profile. How do you present? After the workshops, so that's just the first 2 days. Then we actually start the summit. The first day is called Opportunity Gained, and that's always an issue where we believe if you're serious about these areas, then you need to use all of your resources, 50% of which are girls and women. So, for example, in the area of jobs, growth, and investment, we have, because we're talking about technology, we have Arianna Huffington, who's just confirmed to be one of our major speakers. That's a big plus for us. We have Jennifer Buffett, who's going to come and speak. We have the head of this agricultural, I don't even know what you call it yet, in China, this woman who's come up with how technology is advancing agriculture in China. She's going to come and speak. And the deal is this year is because we're in Moscow, and Moscow is a very different place when it comes to not-for-profits, NGOs, dialogue, we've decided to go digital. So all of these people will be beamed in using Google Hangout. Again, making sure these girls understand that there are no borders, there are no boundaries. And that's a really important message in this world. Then after that first day, and there's a whole slew, and we'll be releasing the agenda in the next 3 weeks, day two, again, a personal passion of mine, it's called Opportunity Lost. And that is, if we don't do something about this issue, we will lose the opportunity to engage these girls and women. And this year we've chosen the eradication of child marriage. 14.2 million girls get married every year under the age of 50. I'm just going to let that sink in for a second. It's 142 million girls in 10 years. They're married at 15, 13, they have sex, they have babies, many of them don't survive childbirth, and if they do, they're very sick afterward. These girls, not only is there a human rights issue around that, it is disgusting. Common sense would tell you this is not acceptable behavior. And then put on top of that, the economic loss of all of these girls not being productive in their communities, in their countries, in their businesses, never running for politics. We have to stop it, and it can be. So there's a group of people, you'll know them, Nelson Mandela, Desmond Tutu, Sacha Michelle, Mary Robinson, they're called the Elders. And every year they pick an issue, and this year last year they chose this issue. And I joined them in Ethiopia, it was 2 years ago, where we sat and said, enough. Enough is enough. So how can the world's organizations come together? And we created this coalition called Girls Not Brides. And that coalition of partners, they are mandated in everything they do to make sure that this issue is on their agenda. So this year we'll do that. We will have incredible speakers who will come and talk to us about what can actually be done. So in some cases, it's the fact that laws do not exist in countries that prevent child marriage. In other countries, the law exists, but no one enforces them. Many people will say to me, well, there's a cultural issue around this. Yes, there's a cultural issue around this. There were cultural issues around slavery, for God's sake. It doesn't mean you don't tackle it. It means you have to figure out how to best tackle it. Countries like Ethiopia, where you think this is a big, big issue, and it is a big issue, they are making great strides. They're going community to community, working with sons and brothers and uncles and fathers and saying, let me explain to you why this is bad for your family. From an economic point of view, I'll end on telling you this one little story. There was a girl in India, and when her uncle died, he left her a goat in his will. Goat. Well, a goat means wealth in a place like India. It came time for her to get married, her father said, I would like you to marry whomever it was. And she said, if I go, the goat goes. Because she had wealth, she was not forced to marry. So there are ways that you can actually prevent child marriage, and one of them is to economically empower a girl, because that wealth stays in the family. So after the 2 days of the summit, the girls then go into a room. I'm not even allowed in this room. Oh, I forget something. Excuse me. Oh, we'll just leave it like that. That's not 301-2883, just so you guys know. So after the summit, the 2 days, the girls go into a room. They're in a room with a moderator, a rapporteur, and a researcher. And it's just the 21 girls. I'm not even allowed in the room. And this is where they take the experience of their workshop, combined with the information that's been provided to them from the panelists, combined with the research they did before they even got there. And their job is to sit down and write a communique with actual things that they think the G20 leaders should do. And they're all around the different areas and saying to them, if you're serious about engaging girls and women, then you must do this. For example, one of my favorite examples is, as you're building new government buildings, make sure that there's a Wi-Fi capability. That may not seem like a big idea to us, but how are those girls going to get health information, job opportunity information? That's a game changer, right? Another one, a really good friend of mine, this has never been captured in one of our communiques, and every year I'll put it on the table for them to consider. I get to do my little lobbying, but sometimes it just gets tossed out, which is fine. A very good friend of mine started an organization called She Innovates. And what they decided to do on a very big issue is they said, look, lots of girls don't go to school because they get their period, and they can't afford what's needed to be able to deal with this very normal issue. So they said, if government removes the tax on feminine hygiene products, that makes it easier for these girls to get these supplies. So they're pushing really, really hard. That's a simple, right? Only government can do that. Remove the tax on something that is a necessity. I don't think we tax things like bread, or do we tax milk now? Well, that's terrible. My point being, there are things that government can do. Sometimes they don't do them because they don't know about them. And these girls live every single day in different walks of life, and they come up with really cool ideas. So now they've come, they've learned, they've researched, they've workshopped, they've been exposed to new ideas, they've decided what they're going to tell the G20 leaders, and their job is not done. Now we say to them, that's great, we've invested in you, time to invest in your community. So we help them with the help of Google. We give them access to a Google mentor somewhere in the world who will help them after they've decided what initiative they want to work on, come up with a communications plan and a business plan. So, for example, Kartika, the little woman from Indonesia, sweet as sweet can be, comes to Canada, decides, I am going to work on health issues when I go back. 6 days with other girls, and she decides literacy is the number one issue. And she was listening to this very good friend of mine, the president and CEO of the MasterCard Foundation, who got up and gave a speech about education and literacy. And Kartika, whatever it is that Rita said, it stuck with Kartika. Kartika leaves the Toronto Summit, goes back to Indonesia, gets a bus donated. Now listen to this, she gets a bus donated, she's 18. The seats are ripped out, the shelves go up, the books get donated, and she and a group of friends, I think it's 8 to 10 of them, go into the slums of Indonesia once a week to read to girls and boys. She's 18. She decided to do that on her own. We didn't give her a dime. But she knew that she had the ability now to be able to sell this idea, to mobilize for this idea, to get this idea out now, and it's still ongoing, it's been 3 years. I have about 26 other examples like that, where these girls come, they come up with really great ideas, they just need a little bit of guidance, and off they go. One of our girls ended up speaking on President Clinton's panel. He does this thing called the Clinton Global Initiative every September, and she ended up being asked to actually sit on a panel. That's pretty cool. She was 19, right? There she is, sitting on the Clinton panel going, what the hell? Anyway, so the deal is this. Through all of the stuff we do with Girls 20, there's one thing that motivates us. We want to create a brand new generation of social entrepreneurs. And when I talk about social entrepreneurship, I don't make a lot of sense when I say this, but I believe that you can actually make a profit from doing good. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. So that's why we say social entrepreneurs. I'll tell you one last thing, and then I'd like to show a video and then ask you if you have any Q's and A's. One of the things that I have learned, and I think one of the things, the biggest lessons that I've learned is when I talk about women and I talk about girls, I don't talk about equality, I don't like quotas, I don't talk about human rights, because while equality and human rights are really important, other people can do it, and they can do it really, really well. The Girls 20 Summit has one focus, and that focus is the economic argument for empowering girls, period. So one of the things I would say to you is, as you're trying to figure out what you're going to do next, whatever your conviction is, you got that conviction from somewhere, go out and test it. You're entitled to an opinion. You're entitled to finding your own way. That's why you come to a place like Queen's. There are many other schools that you can go to where you're not going to be encouraged to think outside the box. So it has been a pleasure to speak to you guys. I love being back here. I did go to the bookstore and, you know, sort of replace the old sweatshirt, which was terrible. But I love being back here. I remember how much fun I had here, how formative that time was for me. Not because of a bunch of firsts, but because really it was the first place where I kind of felt like a good dose of reality combined with a lot of hope was a pretty magical place to be. So I would love some Q's and A's if you're interested. I'm going to give you a chance to think about those, and I'm just going to run a short video. The video features the girls from the last 4 summits. You'll see their faces and see how we sort of try to encourage them. If you have a chance, please like us on Facebook. And follow us on Twitter, and you're going to get a little postcard. The reason that's important to us is when we go and speak to the Russian government and we say, people are watching, the first thing they do probably is look at our numbers. And so I'm proud that we've hit about 250 million global media impressions. We have about 110,000 people globally signed up, and we're trying to get into every university and every high school so that it's not the fathers and the mothers and the organizations that are deciding whether or not girls take this opportunity, it's the girls themselves.